Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q2 FY18 earnings conference call of Cyient Limited, hosted by Edelweiss Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Agarwal from Edelweiss Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Agarwal.
Thanks, Margaret. Good evening to everyone. On behalf of Edelweiss, let me welcome you to the Cyient Quarter 2 FY18 earnings call. We have with us the senior management of Cyient, headed by Mr. B.V.R. Mohan Reddy, along with other senior members of the team. Without further ado, I will hand over the call to Mr. Ajay Agarwal to start the proceedings. Over to you, Ajay. Thanks.
Thank you, Sandeep, and good evening and good afternoon and good morning, depending on wherever you are, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Cyient Limited earnings call for second quarter of financial year 2018, ended September 30, 2017. I'm Ajay Agarwal, CFO. Present with me on the call is also our Executive Chairman, Mr. Mohan Reddy, and our Managing Director and CEO, Krishna Bodanapu. Before we begin, I would like to mention that some of the statements made in today's discussions may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risks and uncertainties. A detailed statement in this regard is available in our investor update, which has been emailed to you and is also posted on our corporate website. This call will be accompanied with an earnings call presentation. The same has also been shared with you. I would now like to invite Mr. Mohan Reddy to provide a brief overview of company's performance for the quarter ended 30th September 2017.
Thank you, Ajay. Good evening to all of you, ladies and gentlemen. I once again welcome you all to this earnings call of Cyient for the second quarter. In Q2 of financial year 2018, we achieved many milestones. We saw the highest ever quarterly revenues at $150.1 million, with a strong quarter-on-quarter growth of 6.7% on a year-on-year growth of 10%. For services business, the revenue stood at $134.3 million, which is again the highest ever with a robust quarter-on-quarter growth of 4.2% and a year-on-year growth of 9.2% in US dollar terms. The growth in our services business was driven by transportation and communication business units. The design-led manufacturing business continues to improve its performance and delivered double-digit growth at 33.7% quarter-on-quarter, with revenues of $15.8 million. The operating profit was highest ever at 140.9 crores rupees, with a quarter-on-quarter growth of 21.5% and an operating margin expansion of 181 basis points quarter-on-quarter and 56 basis points year-on-year. Net profits for the quarter stood at 111.4 crores rupees, which is the highest ever, with a quarterly growth of 26.9%. Cash and cash equivalents continue to remain healthy at 986.7 crores rupees. The attrition came down to 16.8%. This is the lowest ever in the last 15 quarters. Taking feedback from investors, company declared an interim dividend of 5 rupees per share, the highest ever for an interim dividend, revised the dividend policy to pay out 40% from the current payout ratio of 30%, barring unusual circumstances. This takes into account the future capital needs and also the peer group payout. As a part of our CSR initiatives, we continue to support 25 government schools supporting in education of underprivileged children. As a part of our initiative to increase IT literacy, we have further added one more science digital learning center, taking the total of 55. We have collaborated with collaborated in Haritaharam, a tree plantation program of Telangana government, and planted more than 5,000 trees as a part of this initiative. Sertam Inc. was awarded a platinum premier ranking as a part of the trusted supplier program of Rockwell Collins. We were also awarded with Boeing Test and Evaluation Excellence in Quality Award in the category of Use Standard Work for completing 737-7 project. We signed a definitive agreement to acquire BNF Design Inc., a tooling and precision engineering company, and an agreement to divest Science 49% stake in our joint venture with Pratt & Whitney on the island of Puerto Rico. We also had UTC selling 12.2% of its stake in Science during the current quarter. With this, I would like to hand over the call to Ajay, who will take you over with the detailed financial performance of this quarter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mohan. So let me start by giving a commentary around the revenue. As we saw, we had a growth of 6.7% in terms of the dollar quarter on quarter and 10% year on year. What I would like to highlight is the growth has been very well rounded in terms of from where it has come. If you look at year on year, every single business unit has shown extremely good growth, leading to a total growth of 10%. Most of them are growing at double digits. Also, the growth has come quite across the geographies. We are showing the good traction in Asia Pacific as well as EMEA. Also, it is good to see that the dependence on America as the largest geography is also coming down with the growth from EMEA and Asia Pacific. In terms of the income statement, as Chairman mentioned, I think it has been a quarter with number of milestones. In terms of operating profit, we had an extremely good growth from quarter to quarter, where the overall operating profit has gone up by about 22%. Also, we had an expansion of 181 bps in the margin. Let me just explain where this has come from. I think there has been a good set of initiatives to improve the operational efficiencies. This quarter was also impacted by the wage impact. If you will recall, last quarter we had talked about the wage hike being given in quarter one and quarter two. In quarter one, we had a wage impact of 80 basis points. In this quarter, we had another impact of 70 basis points. In total, 150 basis points has been the wage hike. So wage hike is behind us. If you look at the overall quarter, the exchange rate also has not really helped. So with all these things, I think 181 bps is mainly coming from the operations, both in terms of improvement in utilization, pyramid, and also the improvement in the margins for the on-site jobs. And also the volumes have helped on SG&A absorption. Coming to the profit after tax, so in line with the operating profit growth, we had quarter on quarter 26.9% net profit growth, which is really nice. And as I said, there are no one-offs in this quarter. Both the growth in operating profit and growth in net profit is coming from operations. And these are sustainable performances that we can look forward to going ahead. On ETR, you will see our tax rate has come down by about 300 basis points quarter on quarter. This is because of the change in revenue mix and the profit mix, where the profit has come from the geographies in higher proportion where the tax rates are lower. And also the impact of special economic zones is also helping us, and that will further help us during the year. So we expect, as we said last time, we are on track to make sure that the tax rate will be somewhere between 26% to 28%, depending on the final mix and the traction on the special economic zones. In terms of cash generation, I would say we had this quarter an increase of 1 day in terms of the DSO. But if you look at all other parameters in terms of free cash flow generation, they have been tracking to the plan. And we have always said that basically we are a 75 to 80 days DSO company. We always try to focus and get the DSO to the number between 75 to 80. So you see going forward, while we have done something like 41% conversion in H1, we will try to take this again upward of 45% conversion in H2. And I think we should repeat our conversion going forward. So there's no particular concern that you should have either in terms of what happened on free cash flow this quarter or in terms of what happened in terms of DSO. In terms of DLM, yes, we had a free cash flow consumption of about 191 million. There have been number of one-offs, some of the advances from customers that were expected have moved on to the quarter three. Some of the payments from the vendors have moved to quarter two from quarter three. So because of that, I think we are very sure of the next quarter being cash neutral or cash positive. So I would say, finally, I would like to conclude by saying that in terms of the free cash flow, we will continue the traction in terms of conversion in services, as well as we'll make sure in the H2 we are positive on free cash flow in DLM. Just on the cash position, how it has changed, total cash continues to be good. We are at $159.4 million or 10320 million INR, 1032 crores last quarter. This quarter, 986. The change in between the quarters is mainly because we have paid the dividend during the quarter, the final dividend for the last financial year. Hedge book, if you look at first, let me talk about the other income. Treasury income is fairly at the similar level. In terms of the realized gains, we continue to make the gains on forward contracts. We have made a gain of 161 million in this particular quarter. The other income, if you see the increase from 351 to 406, mainly it is driven by the notional restatement of the items on the balance sheet. But otherwise, all other parameters in terms of the treasury income, realized forward contracts, they are showing the right trend. In terms of our hedging position, you can see on the chart, totally we have $121 million. We continue to be hedged for 70% of the net inflows for the next 12 months. And if you look at, depending on how we look at the gap between the current forward position versus the exchange rate prevailing now or the spot rate or the forecasted rate, we could have somewhere between $3.6 to $5 million of forward contract gains in the next 12 months. With this, I'll hand over to Krishna to take us through the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, Ajay. So, as always, I'll first quickly take you to the investment pipeline with the M&A. I'll talk about it in a few minutes, but there's been obviously good traction over the last few quarters on M&A. We continue to keep the focus. What you have here is an overview of how many things are being discussed across the pipeline, and also a focus on the various industries, be it A&D, communications, etc. So I'll leave this with it. But having said that, if you go to the next slide, having said that, there's also been a couple of good developments on the M&A front, both in terms of acquisitions, divestments, but also partnerships. The first one is we signed a definitive agreement to acquire B&F Design, a company that specializes in tool design, manufacturing, and more importantly, precision engineering. The deal has been done. We're going through the closing conditions, and we expect closure hopefully by the end of the year. The second one is we also signed an agreement to divest the 49% equity ownership that we had in a company called Infotech Aerospace Services in Puerto Rico. This was a joint venture with Pratt & Whitney. Looking at our portfolio and looking at our involvement, et cetera, in IAS and also the longer-term plans that we had in terms of how our business would grow, we decided that it was best that we divest that stake. Obviously, Pratt & Whitney bought the stake, and they're also going to run this as a captive engineering center going forward. So it it all came together in that sense. This transaction will also close sometime in Q3. As most of you know, that Puerto Rico is going through some issues with connectivity, electricity, etc. So we're helping Pratt work through that, but the transaction will close in Q3. Next one is we also entered into an agreement with a company called Elpis. Essentially license Elpis's intellectual property and create a solution around it. The solution helps us better manage the assets on a utility network. It's a quite an interesting way of capturing the data on a network. It brings in a significant amount of automation into the process because real-time signals from the network are captured and then translated into a database rather than somebody going out into the field and looking. So while we license the core IP from Elpis, the solution is then developed by us and we own the IP for the solution. The next thing is, as you probably also know, UTC divested its stake in Cyient. With this, there's 100% of their stake has been sold off to various other people, especially financial investors. But what I want to say is I want to assure you that our relationship with UTC remains the same, if not has gotten stronger. There's a number of proof points of that, including what Peter Longo, who is the Senior VP of Operations and essentially controls all the purchasing that UTC does, what Peter has had to say. Also, more importantly, the actions in terms of extension of our master terms agreement to 2020, the qualification of Cyient DLM as a approved supplier to provide electronic design and manufacturing. B&F, which also is a Pratt customer, which we did with UTC's consent that it would be a good fit for us, or CERTON, which also is a good fit for what we do with UTC. So I want to say that overall, I strongly believe that the relationship with UTC is stronger than ever. And we've also been repeatedly assured that the stake sale has nothing to do with the business, which continues to remain strong. And while we're looking at some of the things that I talked about, there's also a number of things that I haven't talked about which will continue only to add to the relationship. So from that context, while UTC was a great equity partner in the sense that when we were a much smaller company, they came in and they supported us and they gave us a lot of credibility from the equity perspective, they are obviously a very important customer and nothing has changed in that context. Having said that, I will go into the industry outlook. A&D market will experience good growth. We're seeing that in various places. While the year-on-year growth was a little bit benign, I'd say quarter-on-quarter we had good growth, 3.2%, and now we see this continuing. Even in Q3, which historically is a weak quarter for the A&D business, we believe we will see growth, which is a very good sign because that means that we're making up for a significant amount of downside that we see in Q3. And honestly, I think the growth in aerospace will now continue off this pace. The communication industry obviously has had a fantastic run, and the momentum continues into in FY18, and I see that continuing going forward. Because of all the fiber rollouts, be it the NBN program in Australia, CAF2 in America, we are seeing a lot of traction, and I see that continuing at least for the foreseeable future. The UNG business continues to do well. In this business, even to start with, we anticipated a strong H2 versus a relatively slower H1, and that's what is happening. H1 was essentially flat, or I think there was a little bit of growth. But here we're very confident that H2 will be very strong. We have the pipeline, the orders have started, the work has started. We've won some really good deals, so this business will have a very strong H2. The rail transportation business also has had a very, very strong H1. I think it was almost a 30% growth over last year in spite of some of the currency challenges we've been having there. And that growth will continue. We see that our clients ultimately are making some very large-scale investments in rail transport, and that translates to good work for us, and we see this continuing. The industry is also going through some interesting dynamics. CRRC, which is China Rail, is now the largest rail transportation company in the world. Also, Alstom and Siemens, which are the third and the fourth largest rail transportation companies, have announced a merger, so now they've become the second largest rail transport company. But we have a very strong relationship with both Alstom and Siemens, and the way things are paying out, we believe that the merger will actually give us an opportunity to leverage on both of the relationships and actually multiply on that. Industrial energy, natural resources, and infrastructure also continues to continues to be a little bit weak. That's one area where we've essentially had a flat year, and that will continue through the rest of the year, the demand is soft. But I'd say, while that's one area where we've had some challenges, we are seeing some good green shoots come up. We're seeing that there's new spend, especially not necessarily in just the old technology, but in new technology with things like analytics, etc., and we're well positioned. So while FY18 will be a rough year there, at best case will be flat compared to what it was last year, but going forward it looks quite good. The semiconductor industry is going through a very, very strong year that's also translating to good business for us. We had a good Q1, and that momentum sustained. We essentially had a flat Q2, but that's also because the Q1 number was very, very good, and even sustaining that took some work. But we believe that through the rest of the year, we'll have a strong year over there. The medical business, again, is doing quite well, at least from a pure percentage point of view. That's the best growth, but again, we're coming off a small number. So I think we are going to do quite well in that business. We've won some very good deals. There's the macro dynamics in that industry are such that our services and our value proposition becomes quite compelling, and we see this to continue. DLM had a good quarter. We had a very strong growth, but again, as you know, there is cyclicality, but having said that, Q2 was expected to be a strong quarter, and it is a strong quarter, but we're continuing to work on building the pipeline so we don't get affected by the cyclicity, at least in FY19, and there's various things that are going on. So having said all that, the way I would summarize it is the outlook for FY18 continues to be quite good, and I will reiterate what I said previously. We'll see double-digit growth in the services business. DLM will be around 20%. Margin expansion will be about 50 basis points. I'd say earlier we thought it would be flat, but having looked at all the operational initiatives, we believe that 50 basis points for the year is what we're looking at. Utilization has given us 50 bips. Higher offshore mix has given us 50 bips. On-site margins have gotten better, pyramid correction, etc. And then that's offset by some wage increases, and also some investments that we're making, especially in the new business accelerator, which is essentially our technology business, etc. So net-net, we will see about a 50 bps improvement in operating profit for the year. DLM will break even at an operating level because of investments. I do want to say, fundamentally, we're back to about a 5 or 6% operating margin there, but that's all going back into investments, and I see that continuing to the rest of the year. So net-net will have a double-digit earnings growth, as we've previously committed to, and we believe that what's happened in Q2 reiterates the strength of the business, and that we will have a good year, all said and done, in FY18. So with this, we will open it up for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with a question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset mode while asking your question. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Mohit Jain from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Two questions. First is on order intake. So this is continuously flattish or going down. In this quarter, it was down on a YOY basis. So how should we read that number?
So, Mohit, I think order intake this year, this quarter, was lower than what it was last quarter of YOY. But we track that quite closely. We're not concerned about it because it's just the cyclicality of the orders and how they're coming in. There's a few things that got pulled in from from Q2 into Q1, and there's a few things that got pushed out from Q2 to Q3. So net-net, it's these things coming together. Q2 has just been a tough quarter from an order intake perspective. But having said that, and the way that the order pipeline works in our case, I'd say that I'm not very concerned about where the order intake stands. Backlog continues to be strong. We have about 6 months worth of backlog. So therefore, I think what we see is it's an aberration and nothing to be very concerned about. And the second thing is H2 typically has a much stronger order intake, and that's backed by the pipeline that we see at this point. So in that sense, I'm not too worried about order intake.
There's no change in business environment from your perspective, like deals getting pushed out or maybe the last 4 quarters?
No, I think it's just a point-in-time thing. I think from the order intake, at least, now there are obviously certain areas where things get pushed out, et cetera. But from the overall order intake number, I wouldn't read that at all. I think it's just a point-in-time thing.
The second was for Ajay, sir. What was the cross-currency impact in this quarter, QOQ?
The cross-currency impact of Q&Q is about 1.6%.
So 5% would be the constant currency number. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, that's all from my side. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Urmil Shah from IDBI Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on a strong quarter. A couple of questions. Krishna, if you could provide more details on, you know, which are the verticals which are, not doing well in the U.S. and we can see an improvement going forward.
Well, I think the in the U.S. specifically, I think IENR, which is mostly U.S.-centric, we still have some challenges. Also, the A&D business in the U.S. has some challenges just because UTC is in the rebalance mode. That's where we've had a challenge in Q2. But non-UTC, the A&D business continues to do actually very, very well. And UTC also, we see the recovery will happen Q4 onwards. So it's just a rebalance issue. The whole equity stake and all that is just they're re-looking at their portfolio. But having said that, I think UNG is another area where we've had a little bit of a slowdown in the U.S. Again, there's one project where the work got pushed out. But again, that's primarily because of some of the things on the ground in California with weather conditions, et cetera, where we need to go do some field survey work, et cetera. So I'd say these are the three things, UTC a little bit, IENR, and UNG is what is driving the slowness in the U.S. at this point. But again, I'd say all this is nothing that is systemic, all of it which will which will recover in Q3 and Q4.
Sure. And as regards, the growth in large clients as a bucket, it has grown faster than the company growth rate. Anything to bother about, or across all the clients, the growth has been broad-based?
It's been quite broad-based across the clients. I think if you look at the numbers in terms of the top clients, just give me one. If you look at the contribution of the top clients, it's been about the same, which means that the top 10 clients I'm talking about, it's been about the same, which means that the growth has been pretty much in line with the rest of the company. So again, nothing too much to read into it. I'd say, as with any quarter, there will be ups and downs. But there isn't the great thing about this quarter, and I think going forward, is there isn't one customer that's really driving any aberration. It's been quite broad-based. Having said that, there'll be always ups and downs, but it hasn't been one aberration that's driving all this.
Sure. Lastly, Ajay, if you could provide some details as regards, you know, the tailwinds on the EBIT margin, EBITDA margin in this quarter. Wages, you mentioned a negative impact of 70 bips. You know, if you could highlight, you know, what is the contribution on
sure.
the positive side?
Sure. So if you see, as I mentioned briefly, the utilization has improved quarter on quarter. The offshoring has been a favorable moment during the quarter. Some of the margins that came in on-site jobs, they were higher. That has been the tailwind. So, and fourth one, I would say, is the SG&A absorption as a combination of cost control as well as the absorption has been better. So I would say these are the four things which have led to the expansion of the margin.
Okay, thanks. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sagar Lilly from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. Krishna, from your comments on most of the verticals, whether it's utilities or transportation, comms, aerospace, even semiconductor for that matter, it looked like you're quite bullish on the second half of this year and expecting a material pickup there. Should we assume that the seasonality that you normally see in the second half will not really play out as usual and probably the strength in all these verticals will keep your growth afloat in the next two quarters as well?
See, the thing is, in Q3, we will start with a minus 5%. That's the challenge. So even for us to say get to a flat quarter, you know, means that there's a 5% growth inherently in the business. So that's the challenge that we face. We believe that, you know, we will make up that 5%, for example, in this Q, sorry, in this Q3. So in that sense, I think there is some good momentum and there is good growth. Now, to grow at, say, a similar rate in Q3 means that essentially you're growing minus 5 plus something else, and that becomes quite a challenge. But I'd say, you know, the momentum continues. I would say, you know, meaningful acceleration we have to see, but at least the current pace will continue.
Sure. Also, now that your offerings in aerospace are getting transformed materially because of recent acquisitions, do you see a time when the Pratt account probably could see double-digit growth again, plainly because of an expansion of addressable market within that account?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's excluding the DLM business. Only the services bit is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's various things in services that we're looking at. If you look at it, actually, we were looking at the last 5 years, the CAGR in the Pratt business is about 10%. We believe that that momentum is absolutely there. It's just a point-in-time thing. I do want to reiterate that, you know, whatever is happening in UTC is a very point-in-time thing. The relationship is as strong as ever. The momentum is behind us. We will get back to double-digit kind of growth in the coming years.
Perfect. That was helpful. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pankaj Kapoor from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Krishna. Congrats on a good quarter.
Thank you. So
at least three of your large clients, you mentioned about Siemens, Alstom, and of course UTC is also engaged in their merger with Rockwell. So at this point of time, does it in some which way lowers your visibility in terms of the business flow from these clients? And do you expect that maybe in some part of the second half or maybe even flowing into the next fiscal, there could be some impact on the business because of the clients undergoing the acquisitions or mergers?
I don't think so. I think if you look at it, while they're going through a merger, they also have their end obligations which don't really change. So in that context, if I even look back into some of the previous acquisitions that, and I mean some of the previous very large acquisitions that our clients have done. For example, when Siemens had bought Invensys Rail, for example, or when another good example is when UTC bought Goodrich. While at some point we will, you know, things settle down, but through the transition we won't necessarily see any change in how our business works, because ultimately they have obligations to their end customers, and those obligations can't really be overlooked. So in that context, we typically haven't seen, again, these are the two examples, and I'm sure there's others, but these are the two large examples that come to mind, that is Siemens buying Invensys, where Invensys was our client, or UTC buying Goodrich, where the acquirer in this case was our client. We didn't really see any significant impact on our business, at least through the acquisition phase.
Sure, that's helpful. And second question is, in terms of Pratt itself, you were hopeful of some recovery there in the second half, or later in the second half, flowing into FY19 now. So any color, if you can give, what exactly is happening there, and does it have to go with the concerns that Pratt is having with their own line of business, or is it just some sort of rationalization of work which is undergoing over there?
So two things are happening. One is just rationalization of work. They're cutting down the number of suppliers. They're relooking at how much outsourcing they do. But the suppliers that remain, and obviously we are at the top of that list, will actually get consolidated more business. So in that sense, that's actually turning out quite good for us. It's just that, in Q3, we're starting to see some of that work. But again, just the way that Q3 works, we won't see material pickup just because you hit Thanksgiving and then Christmas holiday, so you just don't get momentum. So Q4 and going into FY19, that will play up quite a bit. And the second thing is also, while their civil aerospace has slowed down, their military aerospace is going to pick up quite a bit. And we're also very well positioned for the military aerospace, be it through our engineering center in Hartford or some of the acquisitions with Certon in Melbourne, or with also we have an engineering center in West Palm in Florida. All these put together will give us actually some very, very good momentum on the military program. So therefore, Q3, we are seeing some things happen which will really translate into good momentum into Q4, but more importantly into next FY.
Got it. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Srivatsan Ramachandran from Spark Capital. Please go ahead. Srivatsan Ramachandran, your line is in the talk mode. You may go ahead with your question, please. Due to no response, we'll move to our next question, which is from the line of Ravi Menon from Elara Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I love that excellent control on employee costs, despite headcount addition. So were the additions being back-ended for the quarter, or was there some sort of reduction in the on-site proportion?
Sorry, Ravi, say that again?
So I thought that the employee costs were very well contained, despite very strong employee additions. How should we read this? Were the additions back-ended for the quarter, so should we see next quarter maybe a bit more of a spike in employee costs? Or was there something more structural, like a reduction in on-site proportion, something else that helped lower?
No, I think a couple of things happened. One is there is a offshoring after a while and after some struggles is now growing, which means that a lot of the employee addition is offshore rather than on-site. The other thing is a large proportion of the additions are also fresh college graduates. So obviously the cost that's associated with them as a proportion comes down. So these are the two things, more additions offshore for that revenue, because offshoring has actually gone up. And the second thing is these are fresher college graduates. So we won't see any sort of unexpected spike or anything because of this in Q3 or going forward.
Right. And I thought sales and marketing too, seen a slight decline in absolute terms. So that's very unusual for you. I've always seen you invest back into the business. So should we see that move back up?
This is a very marginal change, if I can say that, Ravi. I think we were spending around 61, 62 crores. This quarter it is close to 60 crores. I don't think you should. Some of it could be, certain movements here and there about certain events and other things. So I think our focus on sales and marketing continues. We continue to spend about 6.5% to 7%. These trends are just a question of, how the events and some of the discretionary expenditures have taken place. The focus, there is no change.
Great. And so just some more color on the DLM side. So you did talk about, you know, how you were targeting 20% growth for the year. So is there any progress on, you know, some of the defense offset or engaging more in aerospace and defense, some progress towards that, or, you know, should we continue to see communications driving and medical, maybe medtech driving most of your capacity there?
So I think we're starting to win some very good aerospace deals that will drive some of the growth going forward. The offsets, et cetera, are still way out there. I think we're still not going to see any marginal change because of that. I think the changes that we will see is aerospace and defense is picking up, so we're going to see some good, you know, well-known aerospace customers drive revenue going forward. Communications, we will, you know, we'll see that business flatten out or even come down a little bit because our intent, again, has been, it was really more of interim thing as we build out the rest of the business, so we're not going to grow that too much, especially given how the profitability in that business works. Medical also will continue to grow. That's another area where we've had a lot of focus. So aerospace and medical will be the growth. Comps will slow down a little bit.
Right. And for the third straight quarter, I think, you know, we've seen pretty good growth outside of the non-top 10. So if I look at the non-top 10, they've done really well. So is there any specific vertical that's done well for you? Or is there some particular customer who is actually outside the top 10 but growing very strongly? Or is it very broad-based?
It's quite broad-based. I can't think of any single customer because the other thing, if you look at it, the million-dollar customers improved quite a bit. I think from 57, they improved to 65, which is quite a good number. So they're coming through the funnel. So it's not, you know, somebody with a very large one-off project. It is, we're going through the logical funnel. So I can't think of anybody who is one-off. It's quite broad-based.
Right, and you expect this, these clients can be mined further and they can move further up the funnel?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the intent. I mean, I wouldn't say that everybody will have the potential to be a $20 million customer, but I think we're one of the good things that's happened in the last 2 years is the quality of customers has significantly improved. So all of these customers have the potential to be 5-plus, 10-plus million kind of customers.
Great. Thank you, man. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Jain from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. So I have two questions. So first question is a follow-up on the deal wins question that was asked earlier. So the first 2 quarters have been very soft, and in the last, I think the last quarter you had made a comment that you are expecting 10% growth in order intake in FY18. So do you think that is still doable, given last year's 2H was very strong? And how is the correlation between your order intake and revenue growth? I'm asking this more from a medium-term growth perspective.
See, I think, you know, for the year, we still see good traction on order intake. I think H2 will be a very strong quarter for orders. I mean, a lot of our customers key up in H2, and there's also a lot of new things that are lining up to come in H2. So I think in that sense, we'll see some good good growth in order intake. Now, we still struggle a little bit with the direct correlation between order intake and revenue. Now, I'll say there is a correlation because ultimately order intake becomes revenue. But in terms of when does it exactly become revenue, what's the lag between a PO to a bill, we struggle with that. I think the data is still a little bit raw in the sense that we only started collecting meaningful data about a year ago. So we're still trying to analyze that. But I'll tell you, having said that, though, my confidence also comes from all the qualitative inputs that I get from the BUs and also from the customers directly, more importantly, that, you know, while there is a little bit of a challenge with order intake in Q2, overall the business continues to be very, very strong. So in that context, I'd say there is a correlation, but I don't know what the correlation is. But I'm not concerned at this point.
Okay. So there is no even last quarter you had indicated that the pipeline is very strong. So is there any challenge in converting that pipeline into revenue, or it's taking longer than what you expected earlier?
Not necessarily. I mean, again, you know, if you look at both Q1 and Q2 have been quite strong quarters. So that is, you know, the sort of the strength or the strength in the market is converting into good revenue. I think it's just the direct correlation between order intake and revenue we still need to establish, just because we're a little bit new to this data and how this works. But having said that, again, the qualitatively the markets are very, very strong, at least our markets, I'll say, rather than a broad-based statement.
Okay, understood. And the second question is on the margins. So in the services business, this quarter you have done very well. So 16% plus margins, I think it's very good. So do you think this is sustainable in, so in FY18 you have guided to 50 basis points expansion, but going forward, maybe in the next 2 years, do you think this 16% margin would be could be sustainable?
I think it is. I think there's a lot of overheads that have built up into the system, and we have cleaned up a lot of those things. At the same time, we've brought in a lot of focus on productivity, and there's a set of initiatives there. The third thing is we've also brought in a lot of focus on where margins should improve. So it's a broad-basing things. We said, look, for example, on-site, if we have to continue certain businesses on-site, then they can't continue at existing rates. So we have already done some of these, but there's also an opportunity to do a lot more. So taking that into account, I'd say the margin is sustainable in the services business going forward. Also in the DLM business, we've done a lot of things around identifying the right type of customers, making sure that the business is really growing from these customers, and actually that's why, you know, even if you look at the year, we're having a muted year because we stopped working with a lot of the lower margin customers. So taking all those into account, I think the margin is sustainable.
And is that process over now of rationalization of those low margin accounts?
The first round is over. I think there's still one or two more rounds that we have to do. And basically, what I mean by rounds, I mean, you know, as newer customers come in, we're starting to work with the lower margin customers. We laid out a roadmap for that, what type of customers or what industries would we stop working first, next. And we're somewhere in the process. There's a lot more that we can do over there. But again, we can only do it when the newer business comes in, because we also need the revenue to at least break even.
Right. Understood. Thanks, and all the best for the rest of the year.
Thank you.
Thank you. We would request participants to limit your question to two at a time. We'll move to our next question, which is from the line of Gaurav Rateria from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, Krishna. Congratulations on strong execution. Two questions. Firstly, on the aerospace, you still showed a pretty decent growth during the quarter despite the challenge of UTC account. So what was the offsetting factor? What led to that growth? And secondly, do you think that for the full year, the outlook for aerospace has kind of tapered down versus last quarter because of this challenge in UTC account, and what's kind of offsetting that to maintain the guidance for services business growth?
So, Gaurav, I think a couple of things. One is the others in aerospace and defense are growing quite nicely at this point. There's clients in there are other clients in North America. There's some in Europe. All of them are starting to pick up. In terms of and therefore, you know, in spite of UTC having a weakish quarter, overall things look quite okay. And I think that kind of growth continues, and also UTC growth comes back. That's why for the rest of the year also we're quite bullish. We will be a little bit lower than where we had thought at the beginning of the year with aerospace and defense, but I'll say a couple of things. One is while we're a little bit lower in A&D or a little bit lower in UTC, rest of the A&D is pulling through quite significantly. And there's also other areas like transportation, which will beat where we thought we would be. So net-net, that's why the services guidance still remains what it is. Also, I think UTC is a transient problem. So we believe in Q4 at some point we'll see the pickup again. So therefore, you know, we're not discounting it in the sense that there's no crisis on its way, which means that we can really focus on growing some other parts of the business where there is a lot of opportunity at this point.
Sure. Secondly, could you help us get some color on the kind of pipeline you have in the DLM business in terms of size of those orders or what kind of work you are pursuing? And maybe you can kind of put that in the context of what work maybe you would be doing in UTC. because that kind of addresses both the questions in terms of growth opportunities over the longer term with UTC account and also with respect to traction in the DLM business.
Absolutely. So if you look at historically when we bought DLM, a lot of the capability there was designed to print, which means that somebody already did the design. They gave us the prints, which is essentially the manufacturing instructions and the manufacture. But going forward, and the intent of buying Runcin's at that point and Cyient DLM now was that we could then translate it to a build-to-spec, which is somebody gives us the specification, we design, and then we manufacture. So a lot of the pipeline that's building up is in this B2S space. And what that does is, A, it gives us a lot more stickiness in terms of the whole process. But more importantly, since we also own the design piece, it gives us a much better control over margins. We can make significantly better margins in build-to-spec kind of projects than build-to-print. So that's where the pipeline is building. A good example with UTC would be UTAS, which is the electronics business or the electronics intensive business of UTC. If you look at it historically, Cyient has been doing a lot of design for them. Runcin's or Cyient DLM has been doing manufacturing for them, but in two different isolated buckets. What we're seeing now with UTAS is that we're bidding on projects where we have the ownership of the entire cycle. We're responsible for the design, we're responsible for the certification and prototype, and some element of volume manufacturing. Again, if it's very high volume, we can't do it or we don't want to do it. So if you look at how the pipeline is building up, it's really building up in this build-to-spec aspects of DLM, which give us much better margin and much better stickiness. So UTAS is a good example of that. Other examples are people like Honeywell, Thales, etc., where the build-up is also on the build-to-spec kind of project.
Sure. Krishna, last question maybe, if I can. So when do you think this pipeline materializes in terms of order intake? Maybe revenues will follow after that. And do you think that this kind of the whole position of UTC and UTAS acquiring Rockwell is more of an opportunity for you over a longer term?
So Gaurav, she limited you to two questions and this is your third one, but I'll say absolutely. That's where things are evolving. I think we see a significantly higher opportunity. If you look at our pipeline today, which is in excess of $1 billion, about 30-35% of that pipeline is these design-led manufacturing kind of projects. So I'd say that's the whole intent, and that's where the pipeline is building. And similarly, to your point, when UTC will close the Rockwell transaction. Rockwell is another very electronics-intensive organization. So our ability to do build-to-spec in electronics for Rockwell becomes that much more appealing. So in that sense, what you said is absolutely true. We see that, you know, that gives us a lot more opportunity and a lot more customers, and that's what's the intent, and that's playing out at this point. Now, what I'll say is FY18, we've started a lot of the design aspects. 18-19 is when design will have to get, design completed, validated, prototyped, certified. So 19-20 will start to see some of the volume pick up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We would request participants to limit your question to two at a time. The next question is from the line of Abhishek S. from Equitas Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. The first question is regarding UTC account. Krishna, is there a possibility that the projects which come up in the next few years, the competitive intensity for those projects could go up, especially on the UTC account?
I don't think so. I think the competition is there, and we compete quite well. At the same time, I think while UTC has a very competitive process up front, once you're a supplier, it's actually quite a fair process and quite a robust process, both from their side and our side. So in that context, we have a master services agreement till 2020. And we actually, if you even talk to them, they'll tell you that even in the negotiation phase, typically we are the first supplier that gets all the negotiations done, because we're also quite... we know what UTC is. We have a sense of a significant amount of respect for them. They have a significant amount of respect for us. So we're able to come to a conclusion that works for both of us. We believe that will continue. I won't say that we get the best rates from them or we get the worst rates from them, but we get rates that work very well for us and them. Typically, the negotiations with us also start before any other supplier, just because they lay out what their objectives are, what their intent is, and we're able to really get to a situation that works for them. I think that's one of the things that our customers also tell us quite a bit, not just in UTC, but across the board, is we work with them to get to the ultimate objective. The negotiations that we have on MSAs, for example, are not just about price, they're many things, and we're quite good about it. So in this specific case, we believe that we have, we understand them, we understand their objectives, they understand us, they understand our objectives. So in that sense, A, from a shorter term perspective, till 2020, we're set till the end of 2020 with the MSA in place. And after that also, I think we know how to manage the situation.
Okay, that's helpful. And the second question is for Ajay. 90% of the business is today operating at 16.2% margin, and we are having a roadmap for improvement in DLM margin. So to reiterate, the question asked earlier, are we kind of building in a buffer when we say only 50 basis points of improvement in the margins, or there are investments on any acquisitions that we are that is kind of limiting our scope in terms of margin improvement?
I would say that this is quite a realistic forecast or guidance in terms of 50 basis points. I think this is the most likely scenario. Sure, we can always have an upside. As you rightly said, it is driven by there are investments. Also, in quarter three, you do get some challenges in terms of the paydays and the bill days, gaps and things like that. So I think keeping everything in mind, I would say 50 basis points is quite a realistic thing, and we will work towards maybe improving it by a few basis points here and there.
Okay, that's helpful. And just a follow-up to that, in the quarter one, sir, you had highlighted that the impact of wage hikes could be 180 or 190 basis points. And, in this quarter, you are suggesting it is closer to 150 basis points. So should we assume that the wage hikes were softer than, what you had planned, or, anything that we should read more into it?
Just to clarify, again, I'll tell that originally we had planned an impact of about 180 basis points. The actual hike has been given between quarter one and quarter two. The total impact of that is 150 basis points. That includes 70 basis points in quarter two. You always have a few corrections here and there. 10-20 basis points in H2 could possibly be there in terms of market correction and other things. So I would say not really. We were very careful. We already talked about it. We were very innovative in terms of the way we dealt with the wage hikes, trying to take care of outliers and outperformers and things like that. So I would say it has not really been soft. It has been in line with the plan.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Agarwal for closing comments.
Thanks. Thank you, everyone, for participating in the call. I will hand over the call to Mr. Reddy for his final remarks.
Thank you, Sandeep. Thanks to all of you for participating in the call today. Thanks to Edelweiss for hosting us. As Krishna spoke earlier, we feel very confident about the business. We feel that we'll certainly achieve double-digit growth for this year. The manufacturing grow about 20%. So on that count, I will say that the leadership team, led by Krishna, Ajay, and the rest of the people who were present at our review with the board of directors, feel very upbeat about the business. So I'd like to assure our investors that business is in good shape and will continue to perform. Thanks again for being present in the call today. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Edelweiss Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.